He'll giggle, and he does. And, of course, the two early horses won. No, no more ice. The very next race was a turf race at Santa Anita, which had been running very early for some reason, but the race variegated sustained, and the sustained horses won. Now, guess what? It doesn't work 100% of the time. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here talking about this stuff, because we're still developing it. But here is a phase of the methodology that's been developed, which uses all of these other phases in a way that it's the most creative and brilliant way of handicapping a horse race that I know of. Now, the purists, people who are entrenched in phase three, have a lot of trouble with this approach. It's radical. I sat down with Paul Mellis, who I consider a very, very brilliant conventional handicapper, someone who's made his living at this game for a while. I explained to him what he did, what we did, and at first, he kind of chuckled. But then when we started talking about fractional relationships and how the horses will run against each other, his ears pricked up, and he said, yes, that's the secret to the game, and you shouldn't be giving this away. That was his remark. But since we're in Perco, we do. That's part of our job. But no, well, not, you know, Howard says not giving it away. No, that's right. Put the money in the basket. You too. But if you haven't mastered the earlier phases of the program, then the later phases won't make any sense to you. Yes. You can get someone who just opens a racing form, types the horses in through energy, and the miracle of this program is that it will produce 65% winners blind, without any work, using it as an idiot box. But where you really begin to appreciate is when you've been working with the other versions, the other phases of the program, and seeing, you know, just how brilliant those calls are. I don't know how it makes calls. Those of you handicapped that race, the Diana handicap the other day on the turf, the race won by Wooing and Great Honor or something, that finished second. Well, the horse was disqualified. I had a large bet on the horse, but there you are. That's racing luck. This race was variegated early by energy. Now, I'm sorry, for those of you who have been playing Saratoga turf, you know that turf course has been running very, very late. Well, there you go. There's a race where it predicted that these two horses would break contact with the rest of the field and go on. Now, we have a glimmer of it. Tom Brohammer was the first person in the methodology to emphasize, you know, his ESP, early sustained impressor. He called them FMC, front, middle, and closers, something that Howard had talked about for a while before that, but Tom really began to emphasize that because he knew from keeping those detailed track profiles and regression models that sometimes a race didn't go the way the track required. And the answer was that it was in the specific matchup of the race, the specific ingredients in the race. And so energy is an approach that balances both of these approaches. It says, look, we know the track is requiring this. It's requiring 69% median. It's requiring that the horse be two lengths behind or less. But we know that the race is requiring this, that the horse should be able to press and be sustained. And combining those two insights, the requirements of the inside of the race and the external requirements of the track, that we're able to get results that surprise Howard, they surprise Jim, they shock me, because I have never been able to get those results other than with extensive, tedious, hour-plus analysis of a race. 32 to 1, Wooing, yeah. Was I pleased at that disqualification? You bet. Did I comment on the steward's parentage? Yeah, you bet. Oh gosh. Oh yes. Well, sometimes, you know, listen, it's very important. We have all types here in the charter members. You'll probably be able to relate more to one or another. Tom is as calm as the day is long. I've seen him have a very big bet in a race, and the horse got a horrible ride or something. Well, you know, horse racing and all. Those of us who have more of a Latin temperament, you know, we just don't take things this calmly. And it's okay. You know, Howard laughs at me because I yell at the screen and, you know, and think that that's going to affect a race. It doesn't affect a race. It makes me feel better. So That's my little therapeutic thing. I get to call horses all kinds of things, little pigs and pork cutlets and that kind of thing. It's helpful. So that's where we are now. We're in phase five. There are two more phases coming, phase six and phase seven. We've just begun to scratch the surface of deceleration, because in truth, horses are not accelerating against each other, but they're decelerating against each other. But we're using the insights that we're gathering, with your help, by the way, from the energy program, to develop a practical way of using deceleration. And finally, phase seven is going to be something which synthesizes all of them, the grand unification theory, if you will. What that's going to look like, no one knows. Okay. Howard's going to have to smoke his pipe for another year or so before we begin to get a glimmer of it. But we've reached a point where we can say, yes, we're maturing as a methodology. We really have created something greater than the whole of the sum of the parts. Because this creation that we have called energy is greater than any of the phases separately. And it's even greater than the combination of all of them. It's a remarkable thing. This is not to tout you on energy, by the way. This is not to say, oh, energy is the greatest program, you should all get it and all like that. Yeah, Tom was ready to buy it? Yeah. Pay this man $500, you got it, Tom. No, you can't have it, actually, because you laughed at it. That's not to tout you on it. It's to let you know where we're going, the direction in which we're going. Because the truth of the matter is, with the proper psychology and following the procedure that we're going to be outlining ad nauseum this weekend, APV, PBS, ESP, Paceline Analysis. By following that with the proper psychology, you could use a hand calculator and win money at the racetrack. That's not what PERCO is all about. We're about refining and refining and improving. We're like a shark that has to move forward or die. That's why Howard's wearing a shark skin suit, so you can see. Yeah, move forward or die. And that's where energy is going. And just like in human consciousness, when you think that you've reached, yeah, I'm great the way I am, and I can't improve anymore, and just, you know, then that's as good as you're going to get. And maybe that's okay. Maybe that's fine. But there's always that extra 5%, that extra 5%. If a man's reach does not exceed his grasp, then what is heaven for? Well, that's what we're reaching for, this handicapping nirvana, if you will. And we're moving closer step by step. Incrementally, we're moving closer. Those of you who already have the energy program, you know a little bit about what I'm talking. Those of you who don't, we're going to be talking this weekend about phase three and about synergism in a way which will already reflect the insights that we've gathered from energy. So for those of you who think the seminar, that you've heard it before and all, it's going to be quite an awakening for you. And you're going to see and understand things that I believe will revolutionize your understanding of a horse race. But more to come. Thank you.
As Dick Schmidt would say, I want to follow Michael next time. You'll hear a lot of references to Tom Brohammer being our connection with the mainstream and steadfastly involved in phase three. Yet ironically, many of the things that Tom has given to us, told us about, have been incorporated in energy. The ESP concept, the concept of bias being turned around by the internal makeup of the fraction of the race, was pointed out to us most succinctly by Tom, and all we tried to do was to computerize it. So he may take a little... He may take a little razzing, but he doesn't deserve it in the fact that he is fulfilling that one requisite. He's winning. And as for velocity being dead, that is a metaphor. It's a philosophical concept. You know how long it takes to find out that a star is dead? Average is 170 years. So just because philosophically something is dead or dying does not mean that it will not put you in good stead at the mutuals for years to come. Now, that's all I'm going to give you, Tom. I mean, that's as best as I can do. Was that enough of a tribute? Because I don't want him to mess around with the text of that book, you know. You know, one little stroke of the pen and all you guys' names could be left out.
I made some changes already.
All right, we'll have the break about 10 minutes later than we originally planned, because I wanted to get some insights and oversights from Dick Schmidt to you before we take the break, because Dick, they say here that Tom is the most practical applicator, but Dick is a very practical guy too. This is a guy who gave up a large income to go with the methodology. I think that his story, just briefly given, I hope, so we can all go to the bathroom, should be not only an inspiration to all of you, but should give you some keen insights in what you should do.
Thank you. My wife really doesn't believe that we find out what we're going to talk about on the way over, but I just found out what I'm going to talk about. My story...
My story is much too sad to be told.
Okay, I'll give him my story. Well, I don't know if I can squeeze it in because I've only got 34 seconds. Michael took a long 15 minutes. I want to talk to you about something that I was talking to a friend of mine just the other day. Hey, I...
Stifle yourself.
We were sitting and talking, and she teaches school with my wife. And while we were waiting for Carol to catch Max, she was wondering how I could stand to live on the edge, never knowing. She said, well, how much money will you make back in New York? I said, I don't know. Last time I made X dollars, and this time I hope to do a little better, but you never can tell. I may do a little worse. She said, how can you stand that? That's, you know, that would just drive her nuts. She said, not knowing, not having a regular income of any kind. As a matter of fact, having the possibility not of losing your income, but going into a negative income. You know, you don't have just expenses, but you have outgo, losing bets. I just don't think I could do that. If I'm in the way, just give me a kick. And
no, I think it's very great.
Thank you. And I told her, listen, you talk about security. I had security. I worked for the fifth or sixth, I can't remember which, largest insurance company in the world that has specialized, since they were founded in 1919, in group insurance. I was a specialist in group insurance. I was highly thought of in the company. I had an executive level position, and I had a lot of freedom. They trusted me enough that I only came in the office a couple times a week. Had no time clocks to punch, anything like that. And I was essentially on my own out there. They trusted me enough to carry the company banner out into the hinterlands. Try to talk people out of suing us, essentially. And then one day, they called me and a bunch of other people into a room about like this one. Real nice corporate meeting room. And I would imagine there were a few more people in there than there are in this room, but not too many. And they said, guys, we're getting out of the group insurance business. And the first step is you. You're getting out today. Surprise! Is it a shock? I was working with a guy. He was the kind of guy that would go around and chew out the secretaries for when they threw away a bad copy of a letter if they left the paperclip on it. They didn't save the paperclips. He was a company man from the word go. If you ever said anything negative about good old rape and burn insurance company there, you know, Slash and Plunder Incorporated, he would... You've dealt with Transamerica, have you? I see. Then he would get very incensed. He didn't like that. And he was early 50s, very intense kind of guy. And he was in the room with me. And he got the same word I did. And I thought he was going to just cork out right there in front of me. I mean, the man turned gray. I've never seen a human being turn the color of, you know, two-week-old meat. He just turned this all, and I really thought, he's going down. He didn't. But he walked out of there. I mean, if someone hadn't opened the door for him, he just bounced right off of it. He was just completely out of it. That's security. Here I am. What's a more stable industry than life insurance? What's a more, I'm in this enormous company. We got a big building, our name on it and everything. I'm an executive on the fast track, moving up the ladder. I have it all, at least as far as security goes. And that was one of the things they used to tell us. Well, insurance agents, insurance people, you don't make a lot of money, but boy, you have a lot of security here. You know, it's a lifetime job. Yeah, maybe so, maybe no. It wasn't a lifetime job. Everyone, clean sweep. They fired 3,200 people. And it kind of shows you something about security. Security is not in working for a big company. It's not in working for the government. It's not in anything outside of yourself. True security comes from within. Am I more secure now? 10 years ago, here I was. I had just taken a new position in the company. Had a lot of competition for it. I won. I'm young and aggressive and going out there and beating and killing and raping and doing all the things that they want insurance people to do. Having a lot of fun. 10 years later, I don't work for anybody. I don't have any income. It just flat stops when I stop. Where was I more secure? If you just sat down and wrote out a synopsis of my life 10 years ago and then my life today and gave them to most people and said, which one of these guys is more secure? Most Americans, most people anywhere in the world say, this guy, big company, hey, health insurance plan, hey, life insurance, hey, look, free car, what more can we ask? This other bum, he hangs out at the racetrack. Alright, who was more secure? Who had the ultimate security? I have the security of knowing that I can procure a living, and a very nice living, I might add, anywhere in the country. If I take a notion to freeze my hiney off every winter, I can move to upstate New York and battle through the snow and sleet down to the OTB parlor. Any place where it snows is just unfit for human habitation. Wake up! Move to Los Angeles where there's earthquakes. You'll love it.
People have to do things like read when it snows,
Oh, no. If I wanted to do that, I could do it like that. No problem at all. My income wouldn't suffer. Nothing would suffer. I'd have to learn some new tracks. Take a week. Maybe a few days less. You never know. Want to move to Oklahoma? I'll move anywhere in the country. Most states have some form of pari-mutuel investing there. Ones that don't, you can usually work around it. But that, to me, is security. And even more important than security, it's freedom. There's nobody in this world that I take orders from. Just ask Howard. He'll tell you. I'm a very poor order taker. I don't like that kind of... I know I'd have done poorly in the Army. I didn't get to go into the Army, but if I had, I'm sure the sergeant would have said, all right, folks, or whatever it is sergeants do. And I'd have said something like, he'd have said something like, you see that obstacle course full of mud and barbed wire with machine guns raking it? Run across there. And I'd have said, gosh, Sarge, why? I don't think the military likes the question why, but it's a question that I ask a lot. I treasure and value freedom more than anything else. When I worked for Slash and Burn Insurance, I didn't have my freedom. On the surface, I seemed to have more because I had security, I had income, I had 3 weeks off a year. But I really didn't, because they held me, and they every once in a while give it up, just to let you know, oh, yes, sir. And you'd sit up and take notice, because they had you by where the, you know, where the hair grows real short, they had you. And they let you know it every once in a while. Now, no one has me, and I am free and... free as a bird, free as anything. I can go where I want to, I can do what I want to, I can sleep late, I can take 2 years off and raise Max, I can stay home, I can tell my wife to take 6-8 months off anytime she wants to play with Max. We can do a lot of things. And that is true freedom. Because the one thing you can never buy more of is time. It's the one essential thing that you have just a limited amount of. And time to do what you want to do is very precious. And Howard Sarton's given me that time. And I've used enough of that time. Thank you.
I hope the next time we meet, at least half of you can stand up and make that same speech, if you so want. Let's take about a half an hour break here, 20 minutes at least. It'll take a half an hour to take a 20-minute break, just getting back in our seats. So let's all be really, really, truly assembled by 9. 23. Jim Bradshaw says that all the questions that you want addressed could be answered by one session on contender selection. I told him if he could explain contender selection in an hour, that the seminar would break up too soon. So we'll take these things individually. But basically what you're saying is, who are the true contenders in this race? Because if you put the true contenders in the race into your computer, all those other questions will be answered, except the variant and the track-to-track variant factor. We're going to show you how to do that with this, and we'll show you a lot of things. The energy generator, the velocity version, is for people who are using a velocity program. Quite simply, the energy version is for energy. But you will all have access to this program, and we'll make a special price for it for everybody who attends the seminar. It won't be much. So turn to 18 and read along. I was accused by some people of making the yellow manual somewhat nebulous or ephemeral or non-linear. The reason for that was that if you thought you understood something, you would go out and fail with it and say, well, I understood that, it ain't no damn good. But if you don't understand it immediately and have to put 3-4 months time invested in it, then the obstinance of human nature will say, by God, I'm not going to fail with this. I've given my time to reading it and studying it. Yellow Manual was one man's odyssey of turning from